This podcast is brought to you by Amusement Warehouse Magazine, the industry's largest trade publication. We cover amusement parks, carnivals, fairs, festivals, history, safety columns. We really got it all when it comes to the amusement business. Only remaining print publication in the amusement industry on a regular basis. So if you're interested in what the amusement industry has to offer, subscribe today. You can subscribe by logging on to amusementwarehouse.com, carnivalwarehouse.com, or amusementparkwarehouse.com. Welcome to another edition of the Amusement Warehouse Podcast. Today we have with us Nancy Smith, the general manager of the South Carolina State Fair, and also one of the nicest people you ever want to meet. Nancy, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ron. It's great to be here.
You're welcome. Look at that. You got a little Ferris wheel behind you.
Yes, I do. I've got all kind of fun toys in my office.
Is that your office at the fairgrounds?
Yep. That's my home away from home. And I figured I have all my fair memorabilia here because this is where I spend a great deal of my time.
You live there. I see a bed, toothbrush.
Not yet.
That's great. So I was reading a little bit about you. You've been there for a long time doing stuff. 1983, I think it said you started there.
Yeah, I did. I was interested in history with, you know, I'm kind of a fair junkie, I guess. I guess that's a good way to call it. And that's a compliment to those of us in the industry. But I actually started working, taking vacation from what I always say, a real job at that time. You know, when you tell anyone that you're working, they ask you, what do you do? Well, I work for the fair. The next question is, you know, well, what do you do the rest of the year? That's always the question. So
that is so funny. And some of the other fair managers I've had on, we joked several times about that. What do you do the rest of the year after you're done with the fair? Because that is like, it really and truly, all kidding aside, is the most asked. People have no fathom. They can't fathom that you're there the whole year planning that.
Right. They can't. And I actually got my start in what we call our home and craft department, where the baked goods and all that are. I had a lady that I actually went to church with at that time. She asked if I wanted to come and help put up the items for the fair. So that's where I got my start. And I helped judge in the, well, bring the cakes back and forth to the judges in the home and craft department. And I've always said, I really think you, when you get into the fair industry, you kind of know that you really love it, or you don't really like it at all. It's not for you. It's a certain niche, you know, for those of us who are here. And, you know, I worked there part time. And then our then general manager, Gary Goodman, who I'm sure you've heard of him. He was here for a long time.
I knew
he
Gary,
called me in after the fair, and I thought, oh, what did we do in the home and craft department that was not right? So he offered me a full-time job then. And I've always said it's never been a job. It has always been a career. You know, I'm a hard worker. I, you know, put forth everything, my best with everything that I do, but it's just something to be said about working with an industry and an organization that you really, really love. And, you know, you just really care about it. And I feel like the fair is a gift that's been given to me for this time frame. And I'm like the 4-H motto. My goal is to leave it better than I found it. But it's a great industry. So I started in full time here. I've been 42 years altogether now. I think you can tell a little bit by this. So, and
come
this on. Is all natural.
She started when she was one.
Yeah, I started booking entertainment and exhibits, and then it just went on for other things, you know, marketing and advertising and sponsorship program. And then I was promoted to assistant manager and then manager of the South Carolina State Fair. And it's been a wonderful ride.
That's quite the career. How long was Gary? He was there for a long, long time, right?
He was there. Gary came in 1984, and he retired in his last year was 2017.
Wow. 84, 94. Wow. That's a long time.
Yep. Yeah. So my first year was kind of an interesting year. You know, that was 2018. And so I just prayed for a safe fair, and we had a hurricane that year. And it was the first year in our then 149-year history that we'd ever had to close the fair for one full day. But we did it because, you know, patron safety is always of utmost importance. And we did it. But we had a safe fair, and our revenue, you know, was good, was better than the year before with a 12-day fair. So, and I recall saying at that time, "Woo, if I get through this, I can do anything." Well, if you remember, that was 2018. So, 19, we had our 150th anniversary, and then we had a little thing called COVID in 2020. So
yeah, that's that was something Gary didn't prepare you for.
He did not. I can't believe he left me like that. I think it was pretty funny because that year that I was the first year as manager, I know North Carolina State Fair and Georgia National, this was all three of us our first year as manager, and all three of us closed the fair for one day, you know, and ours was the Thursday, the second day of the fair during that year with the hurricane that came through. So it's trial by fire, but you learn a lot during that time. So,
wow. Yeah, that was, were you guys consulting back and forth on what to do with whether, I think there was some quite, especially in South Carolina, because you probably, if you really pushed it, you probably could have gone, right?
Well, maybe, but it was more wind for us. Thankfully, it was not. Are you talking about storm or COVID?
COVID.
Yeah. Oh, no, we wouldn't have done it. I just didn't feel right about it. You know, that's one of those things.
I'm just saying, governmentally, you might have been able to pull it off because South Carolina was one of the least restrictive as far as.
Right. Yeah. And we're a 501c3 too. So, but yeah. You know, it's one of those things like everybody, that was really a bad time. We finally made our decision in July, our fair's in August. And we decided in July, you know, we had said July is going to be it. We either, you know, fish or cut bait. Mm-hmm. And all my other fair friends, I thought, how do you know? And they said, you will know. And, you know, I did know. And I was very thankful that I did. But I guess that's one thing that I think is very important for me that's been a real life changer for me was 2020. We did have a drive-through fair that year. We not only had a drive-through food fair where people came through and they could buy their food if they wanted it, but at the South Carolina State Fairgrounds, we had actually a drive-through fair. We started, you know, it was all in the car. You had your ticket booth to start with when you drove in, and then you had a little stage set up with a metal band. We had a circus tent with our circus animals and all that in it. And we just did the whole thing. We did agriculture outside. We did art. We had some artists out. We had flowers and fountains and all that. And we had our heritage village. We had dairy cattle, beef cattle, swine, poultry, and a couple of other things all done through the car. And then we showcased the scholarship program and home and craft and all that. But what really got me that year about when COVID came on was the fact that the letters and the calls that we got at the state fair from people that said, thank you for having the fair, that, you know, this is something that we've been doing for years and years, and it's a tradition. And everyone was so by October, you know, they were it was not a good time for people. And they said, you have no idea how much we appreciate that. And, you know, we were looking forward to the fair, and just if we had had to not come at all, you know, that would have just been one more, you know, hammer to us. And we got letters, and especially one from a lady that said that year she had lost her father earlier in the year, and it was a huge tradition for them. And she said, you just have no idea. So we've kind of formed a relationship with those people, and it really taught me a lesson to don't ever take anything for granted, and don't ever think, you know, that you're not, when you get really tired and, you know, you're wondering, what in the world are we doing here? We are doing, you know, a great thing. We're making a difference. And I think that is so important. And it was important then. But, you know, as time goes on, I think it's more important now than ever for us to remember what fairs bring to our communities and to our state. And as a manager, it really taught me some difficult lessons. We had to, you know, lay off a few people in 2020, but it really taught me to really look hard at what we're doing and how we're doing it. And I think, you know, I prayed a lot during that time. I still do. But it was, you know, I think it was a lot of answered prayers for me when I asked for wisdom and discernment. You know, just it was a rough year, but I learned a lot as a manager. I think I learned more that year than any other.
Yeah, it was definitely a tough year. And I run a fair up in New York, and New York was much more restrictive than mm-hmm. South Carolina was, but right. We ran a drive-through, like a food drive-through, and mm-hmm. then we did a Christmas event. But the people, like you were saying, were just so happy to have something to do and to participate in. It was crazy, because even at the food drive-through thing, we had this one area, and I just roped it off and put like these big parking spaces where they could park their car and eat. And we charged, like, I just put up a sign. I was like, let's make it $20 to park and eat or something like that, because there was really no other charge. So, right. And we had so many people like pay to sit there and park in their cars and eat their food. And they were just so happy to do something, anything really to do it. I think that the Delaware State Fair was the only state fair. Well, Florida, of course, earlier in the year, but Delaware was the only one during fair season that actually ran that year. So it was definitely an interesting time, but it was so different too, because I talked to a lot of people between New York and California and South Carolina and Florida. The perspectives were so different too, because like, you know, some were just like, we're not running, you know, for a couple of years or whatever else that it was. And then other places, you know, people were open. You know, some of the people from New York were saying, I wonder if anybody will come. And I was like, you don't have to wonder. There's already some fairs open and they're yeah. coming. So it's,
yeah, exactly. You know,
it's good. But I was kind of surprised, was that you do tend to congregate in your own state more. I mean, not, you know, maybe not fairs like as big as you, but some of these county fairs and things, they talk to their three or four neighbors, and that's all the information they were getting, instead of having a little bit bigger reach to see what, you know, some of the other states were doing and some of the other places were doing.
Yeah. And I think some of those, you know, well, you know, South Carolina, we're a small state. We have 12 fairs in South Carolina. And I think during that year, a lot of those fairs thought about it, like I said, what they were doing, and try not to put all of your eggs in one basket, which is sometimes kind of hard for fairs. But a lot of them, as you well know now, are doing like spring fairs. You know, we even have some, you know, going on now in South Carolina. They'll and Georgia as well. They'll be doing the little spring fairs. And I think that was a offshoot of, you know, COVID and looking at, you know, how they could have other revenue streams. And
yeah, that's also a little bit cyclical. I remember early in my career, a lot of the fairs started to do spring fairs, and then they did it for a year or two, or maybe weren't successful, and they stopped doing it. And it seems like every, I don't know, every couple decades or decade, they throw it out there and try it for a year or two and see if
comes
it works.
Back but around. Yeah.
It's not the same. Yeah. And, you know, South Carolina too, I had a friend who owns a carnival who's actually during COVID in March was playing near Charleston, and he was open, but nobody shut him down. He just was like open. And then, you know, they were shutting things and going, because he called me one day and he's like, I don't know what to do. He's like, they're not telling me to shut down, but everything else is shutting down. So maybe I should shut down. I don't know what to do. But I think he was one of the last, at least that I know of, events that were open, but I don't know if they would ever shut them down. It was like South Carolina was pretty, you know, laissez-faire about that.
Yeah, we had a little more freedom, I guess you would say.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, even during, we had our fair in 2021, and, you know, it was, of course, the lingering effects of COVID from that, you know, even from, you know, fire marshals roving the grounds and looking at the attendance and the different tents and things like that. So
and having these restrictions that they weren't really sure about, or that were
exactly
a and year old. And
yeah. Who's going to enforce this? So,
yeah, I did an event in Virginia, Norfolk, like the next year. And they just literally making things up. I mean, it just was like, you could eat sitting down, but not standing up, or vice versa. I can't remember. And I asked them why. They had no idea why. They were literally making it up as they went along, because they thought maybe that something wouldn't travel by. It's crazy when you really think about it. I mean, if you took right. biology or do anything, but you know, it was just, I think people were just reaching for trying to figure out something, or maybe they were just an administrator and they had to come up with a plan, you know, that they had to submit. Mm-hmm. So they just were writing things down to like, oh, okay, you have to
twirl around three times and spray yourself with some spray, and then you're okay. You know, it was weird, but right. We did learn a lot. I mean, no question about it. But.
Exactly. Well, I do know, as I said, during our time there, boy, people really, they flocked to the drive-through fair. And our concessionaires, you know, they had, other than Florida, as you said, they were so appreciative to have some business.
Yeah.
And we were just blown away while the way the drive-through worked. I think with us being in October, we were the beneficiaries of how some of the other food drive-throughs had done. And so we knew what not to do, what they had done. They told us, don't do this. So we had a pretty well-oiled machine with that. But it was amazing. People waited in line, you know, like 2 hours. They just drove through and, you know, they would do it every day and a couple times a day. But I worked the parking gate. You know, we didn't charge for parking, but I worked, you know, when the folks were coming in, and that's where we heard the comments, and, you know, of course online too, but it was so great to see the kids and the families and the moms and dads, and then the people that were going back and forth to work that had not been doing that for a while. They were just so appreciative.
Yeah, it was a big thing to be able to park, like with mine. It was the craziest. They have a racetrack there, and they were, they would have car races, and they had they have a drive through area. It's like you park your car and can sit there, and they were going to run the races and park and watch the car. And then the state came in and said, you couldn't do that either. And they said, why not? And they said, because you could have, you know, drive-in movie you could have, but they were just like, we're not going to let you. And if you do it, we're going to take away your liquor license. So it was just all over the place. It was a weird time. It's like hard to even think about now, you know, when you're,
I know,
years removed. It was really a different time.
Yeah.
Getting back to your first job was entertainment director. Now, did you I know you now don't have, you know, sort of big name acts or stuff like that, but did you at one time have bigger name acts, and how was that learning process to have to get into that business a little bit? And
yeah,
it's not the easiest thing in the world, especially now. It's impossible, but.
I know. Entertainment's another thing that's really changing as we go along. That's a great question for us for South Carolina, because we've done something a little bit different. But yes, in answer to your question, Gary handled most of that. And we worked with Jimmy J at that time with Jason Promotions. That's who we started with for our grandstand entertainment. And we had ticketed grandstand acts, but by the time I came along as manager, we could see that, you know, that was really, we were struggling in that regard, where our budget was not that big. And it was getting to the point where, you know, if you got them at a good time going up, you know, that was good. I think our budget for our grandstand acts was probably $400,000 or $500,000 at that time. So it just got to the point that we were really not able to bring in acts that would really, you know, get the crowd energized and, you know, want to start buying tickets for that. So we made some changes along the way. But the reason we did that in South Carolina when we first brought on the big grandstand act was really to get, you know, that push going for the fair. I remember the time when we started our advertising for our October fair in June. Which, wow. When you think about that now, it's crazy. I told you, yeah. I've been here forever, but you know, that is true. I remember that. And we would send those, you know, we had the big ads in the paper where there was no such thing as, you know, doing it online then, but you know, you would write in what you wanted to come see, mail in your tickets and stuff like that. I mean, mail in your checks for the grandstand artists. And it was a big push. It was used as an advertising tool, you know, to get people all hyped up for the fair. But then as time went on, we really were not able to get those acts, you know, that would be bringing people into the fair. So that was pretty much a challenge. We went with, you know, we went from free concerts to, well, we went to the ticketed concerts, and then we went some ticketed and some free, you know, to add people in there. And then we went to a few ticketed and mostly free. And, you know, we just weren't really getting the numbers in. And it's hard to find, you know, acts that everyone likes. You know, some people are going to like others better than some. So in the end, what happened is, I believe it was in 2018. That was my first year as manager. I believe that's right. We went to the Indiana State Fair, and they had a circus going on at that time, and our board saw the circus. And we thought, you know, we were looking at our numbers, and we're thinking, you know, maybe we need to just do away with our grandstand, our ticketed grandstand, and let's just bring something totally different in. And that was a circus. So they tasked me with doing that. I said, okay, that sounds like a good idea. When would you like to do it? Well, for the next year's fair. So 2019, we removed all of our bleachers, and we had a seating for like 5,000.
Oh, wow.
That included on the ground too, 2,000 of that on the ground, chairs on the ground. But anyway, we removed all the bleachers and we brought in the circus. It's called the Circus at the Fair. And we've had that since 2019. And it has really been a good thing for us. We like it because about that time, you know, now Ringling Brothers is back again here. But, you know, they went away for a while. And it was a way for us to have a circus at the fair. We have 3 free shows a day. We don't charge for any of that. And it's normally pretty busy. It's full, you know, about every day. So we took away the grandstand, the ticketed grandstand acts, and we have Pepsi as our beverage. We have an exclusivity with Pepsi. So we created a more intimate Pepsi Place stage area. And we don't have any ticketed acts there, but we've been working, you know, trying some different things over the years. Last year, we had a few tribute acts. And
yeah, I was wondering, I was just going to ask you that. How did that work out?
It worked out well. And
I've done well with them, too. They're affordable, and they're good. And they're very good if you get the right ones, you know.
And that also gives us a chance to bring in some local folks that, you know, have a pretty good following. And then we'd sprinkle some tribute acts in with that. So it's called the Pepsi Place Stage now. And it's probably about, seating for 1,000 or so. But it's in an open area. And we learned some things. We put picnic tables around in there so people will feel, you know, a little bit better about coming. Our fair's a riding and an eating fair, too. So they can bring their food in there and sit and, you know, eat and enjoy the concert. So I'll have to say we've done some different things with entertainment. We had to look at our grounds. We had some big tents, clear span tents, and we found out that the tents were nice, but no one knew what was going on inside the tents. So we had to make it, more open for our patrons. And they've liked that. When I went to the one of our fairs in Florida, they had a stage with the wind sails and, you know, it was just really inviting with more picnic tables. And that was where like our hypnotist performs under there, and maybe Dennis Lee. So we've created another area for that. And it's working well. I think it's just kind of a putting the puzzle pieces together. But for us, you know, we thought we'd have a whole lot of backlash about taking the grandstand, you know, not having the ticketed shows. And we really haven't. I mean, we do have some people ask, you know, when are you going to bring the acts back? And they don't realize that act is like $1 million. And
yeah, at least,
you know, we can't do that. But they really like the circus. And, you know, we tout ourselves as being a very family oriented, friendly place where, you know, anyone from the tiniest baby to the greatest grandparent can come and enjoy everything. And I think the families have really, you know, embrace the circus. And my thought was, I didn't know, you know, are they going to get tired of this? You know, how long is it going to last? But we're doing it again this year, and people are excited about it.
And the acts change in a circus, so you get different.
We do. And I think Gene and them in the Big E, they've had a circus for years. Mm-hmm. So that was a big step for us. But it's gone well. And we've also, in the entertainment area, you know, if you've been to our fair, the north end of the fairgrounds is the opposite end from where the big parking lot is. So it's always been a little bit of a challenge for us to draw more people to the north end of the fairgrounds. That's where our rocket is. Talk about that later. But this past year, we had some really good entertainment at the north end of the fairgrounds and put some more a few different acts and exhibitors there. And we saw for the first time that, you know, what we did really made a difference there. So I think it's important for us to look at what we're doing and, you know, change those puzzle pieces around and You know, people know we're in October. I think that's important for us as fairs to know. You know, most of our dates stay the same. They know it's in October. It's just winter those times. And we're always going to bring back, you know, have those things that we need to have and that people look forward to, the traditional kind. But we do need to add and, you know, keep up with the times. And
I think that's the one thing that the grandstand, acts do for you that's hard to replace is if you get the right act, it does create a lot of buzz. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you don't necessarily sell a ticket, there's that awareness and the excitement about it does help, but you got to get the right act. And it's really hard. And another challenge you have where you are is being in South Carolina. There's no big cities. I mean, you know, to speak of there's, you know, Columbia and Charleston and Greenville, which are all decent sized places, mm-hmm. but they're not, mm-hmm. you know, Atlanta or New York or Phoenix or, you know, someplace mm-hmm. like that. So that poses a challenge where whatever your book's not going to automatically sell out just because you have a big, you know, a big name. So that I'm sure that was a factor with you too, because it's hard when you don't have a giant population center just waiting to go to a concert right there.
It is. And because of that, you're absolutely right. And that's one reason why, you know, we did it. And we had it, as I said, to create the, woo, come to the fair and see whoever. And then we lost that. And so we've been trying to put in other things. A couple of years ago, I had an exhibit, the Princess Diana exhibit, and that was really unusual. It was the first time it was at a museum before. I think they were out of Canada somewhere. Sunshine Exhibits, I think that's who it was. But it was in picture form, and it had these beautiful pictures, you know, huge pictures, and it was a walkthrough and a documentary of her life. And then they had a little gift shop where you could, you know, purchase some things, and had some photo ops. And that was unusual. That was something that we had not done before. Mm-hmm. You know, you see other things at the fair, but you don't think about coming to the fair to see Princess Diana exhibit. And that was well received. And that was close to where the Pepsi Place stage was. So, you know, we try to do our traffic pattern with that, but people enjoyed it. It was different. But I think that's the other thing that we're trying to do here. We try to introduce things that, you know, have not been at the fair previously, like on our Pepsi Place stage last year. Believe it or not, we had the Columbia City Ballet, and it was Dracula. You know, we're in October, and so the ballet came. They're known in South Carolina, and it was, you know, it was good. They had a really good crowd, and that was. You know, you think of the fair, you don't think of ballet. And we've also had opera, you know, just, you know, interspersed throughout, like in our flower building. You know, we'll have some opera singers around that you'll just be walking around and they'll burst into song. And it's not what you expect at the fair, but it's pretty unusual. So
it adds another element to your fair for people that.
It does. It adds another dimension to it. And people think it's also an educational tool. You know, they think, ooh, I don't like ballet. I don't like opera. But, you know, the people that were there kind of brought it down to a, you know, hey, you don't always have to hear this kind of that or that show. You can learn something from it.
And it's good for them, too. Is there good? You know, if there's 10 or 20 people that say, hey, you know, maybe I'll check out that ballet, you know, that wouldn't have before. Exactly. Because, you know, you touched on it before. But, you know, most of the time, whether it's the county or the state or whatever it is, we're, you know, the fairs are the single largest gathering of people in that thing. So you get around whatever 400,000 people. There's no place else that 400,000 people congregate in at one time. So it is, you know, when you say it's part of the culture, it's part of the, just by sheer numbers, it is. I mean, it just, you know that it is because people go to it, unlike anything else that they go to.
No. And, you know, we always say if we're doing our job right, you know, they should be in a good mood when they get here, you know, and they want to, you know, enjoy themselves and, you know, see everything that they can. So it's we're kind of an unusual thing. And we are the largest event in the state. And we had a really good fair last year. I think we had one of the best fairs we've ever had. And I think we're beginning to see, you know, we're kind of moving in a upward direction. So that's
great. So. You know, the we kind of passed by a little bit, the free acts or the acts that are free for people when they're walking mm-hmm. around. But since you started at the fair to now, that category has changed quite a bit, and COVID really even changed it more, because there's basically no animal acts to speak of anymore. I don't know if you had them, you know, some fairs did and some did, but you know, there was lion and tiger show, or there was, you know, all kinds of exotic things that really don't exist anymore. There's maybe one or two that are hard to get. There's, you know, and it seems like things are consolidating. Like there's 85 racing pigs, and there's, you know, a lot of those acts that have, you know, like a modified, so not the circus on the scale you have, but where they have a, you know, a Globe of Death, and then they have one other act, and then a comedy act, and there's like 10 of those people that have that sort of thing. But, you know, I feel like the diversity is kind of shrinking a little bit, which concerns me, because there used to be a lot more difference, but it seems like things are shrinking a little bit, which is tough to make a choice when you go to the convention or you're looking for something new, something different.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, other than our petting zoo, we have our petting zoo. But as far as animals go, you know, dogs are really, I mean, the dog shows, people love animals. You're right. That is kind of concerning, because they really love anything that has to do with animals. And, you know, we've had the dog shows, and, you know, they come to that, but it is a little bit of a challenge. In the circus, we've had dogs, and then we had horses, but you just, you know, you have to be careful about. Seems like you have to be careful about a lot of things these days. So,
yeah, but it was always fun to see all those different. I mean, I think there's still, you know, there's still monkeys riding dogs. They have that act.
That's the banana derby. I know. I wondered about that. I wonder how they.
He's getting restricted in different states. I was just talking to him. That's probably my favorite act whenever I run an event. You know, he's when I first. But I like live in Virginia, and I try to book him at an event I'm doing in May, and he's like, you know, he said they went to a zoo and confiscated all the giraffes or something, because this was the last administration that was here. I think they're a little different now, but they literally like went and took the giraffes and took everything else. And then they, you know, because the problem is a lot of times they don't even know how to handle a giraffe. So one of the animals wound up getting injured because they didn't know how to transport it. They, you know, it's crazy. Some of the things that are going on, it's like, they just, you know, it's kind of like COVID a little bit, where they know better than the person that's actually handling these things. Mm-hmm. And you know, like I know that, and I'm not saying everyone, but most of the ones I've ever dealt with love their animals and know absolutely how to treat them and treat them very, very, very well. And, you know, I don't know. I think there's a little bit of an overreach there, because mm-hmm. people are never going to get to see some of this stuff. It's right. Like, so, and if you do see it, it's in such a sterile environment where, you know, you just look at it or something. It doesn't mm-hmm. do anything, or, you know, there's no interaction
with it at all. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, that's another area, speaking of, you know, what we're trying to keep alive here is our agricultural, our agricultural roots. You know, we're working on trying to increase our participation in the equine area, you know, with our, especially in the youth horse area. And then there's everything going on with the dairy cattle right now, dairy cattle mm-hmm. and beef cattle and swine and sheep, and, you know, trying to increase those things that may attract more 4-H and FFA involvement for the young folks. So, because like you said, a lot of people, and not just children, you know, that's the only time they get to see some of those animals is if they come to the fair. And we're, you know, trying to make sure that that's as educational as we can. And, you know, we work with our South Carolina Farm Bureau Federation, and they're really good. They, you know, they have scholarships. They offer scholarships in all of those areas. And South Carolina has, I think, the first South Carolina School for Agriculture in here in McCormick, South Carolina. And I've been to visit that, and that's been it's been rewarding. You know, I love, that's the part of this industry that I love too, is being able to work with 4-H and FFA, because I've been here so long till, you know, we've been involved with it. And of course, Clemson University is close here. But over the years, I've really gotten to know a lot of those young folks. And, you know, when they would apply for scholarships the first year, when they come to apply, you know, they have to have an oral part of their application, and they're just like trembling, you know, and they can't talk. But the beauty of it is, in the next year and the year you see them, they're just so polished. And mm-hmm. I've always said that when you know, work with the kids that are in 4-H and FFA, you really see a difference. You know, they really, they know how to work with the public. They know how to talk to the public.
They do. Yeah, I've seen quite a few.
They learn responsibility. And I think that's a part of our fairs that we really need to, you know, never forget, because that is truly making a positive difference, you know, in a lot of young lives. I mean, we give scholarships here at South Carolina State Fair, but that the one-on-one, you know, with those young folks.
I was at a board meeting. It was Florida State Fair. And that the kid that I think he's president of the F, but man, he was, I mean, that, you know, you forgot he was in high school. He was so polished. He was like, did such a great job. And I also heard, I didn't hear, I saw, and I'm going to get the name of it wrong, but you won like a big achievement award for agriculture education last year, I think it was, or 2023.
You did see that. Yes. And that gentleman's name was John Paris, and he had been involved in FFA for over 40 something years. And he was just, he loved it. And he did everything that he could to promote agriculture and, you know, the young folks and getting them involved in that. He was a big Clemson grad, bless his heart, but he had to do something. But, you know, if they wanted to go to Clemson, he did everything he could to try to get them in. And it's an award that was, it's been in place for years. It's the John W. Paris Agricultural Leadership Award. And I was honored to have that, and it was the last year of the living John W. Paris Agricultural Leadership Award. And unfortunately, he passed away in July of last year, but he was from Columbia, and I had an opportunity to visit him when he was in the hospital, and it was just a real blessing. He was quite a character. Anyone that knew him would tell you he was a character, but he loved the young folks, and that's when you say some things are concerning. You know, those are the kind of people that we need now. We need those people to be in that background fighting for our youth, and he loved it so much. At his funeral, it was hundreds of people there, and I went to the service, and there's an organization, a company here called McLeod Farms in upstate, and he died in July, and he made sure everyone had a peach from McLeod's Farms when he left his service. And they made sure, because every year traditionally he went to McLeod's to buy peaches. So they supplied the peaches for John W. Paris's service. But there were a lot of, speaking of that and what we were just talking about, there were kids from I shouldn't say kids. You can tell I'm older now. There were young folks from upstate that were there that had been at the South Carolina State Fair years ago. And one of the gentlemen came up and he said, "Miss Smith," and he remembered me and he remembered my name. And, you know, I thought, oh, son, you know, Mr. Paris would be so proud of you. And that's the kind of difference that being involved in those types of organizations makes in life. So, yes, I was very honored to receive that. And we're going to miss him, but it will even be more impetus for us to make sure we keep moving in the right direction.
Yeah. And you guys, one of the benefits or one of the reasons for the fair is you give away $10,000 scholarships a year, I believe.
We do. And, you know, a lot of people.
See, I thought you just pocketed all the money at the end of the day.
We did. You know, that's like, what do you do the rest of the year? Yeah, the fair just comes to town. All the people, they take all the rides and the food, they take all the money, and then they run away.
They run away. That's another big one.
Exactly. So, oh boy, I remember, speaking of what I remember when we started that program and it was $10,000. And now, that was 27, 28 years ago. And now, we actually, this year, we just opened it in February. February is always the month we open it. And we're giving away $530,000 in scholarships. We're giving away 53 individual $10,000 scholarships. And those scholarships go to graduating seniors that attend an in-state school or university. So our goal is to, you know, get them in school in South Carolina, and hopefully they'll stay here, you know. And
it's public or private, I think I read, right? So it doesn't have to be a state school. It's public or
private. Public or private, yeah. And if it's a two-year tech school,
even Clemson,
we'll work with that as well. So
yeah. Even Clemson?
Yes, I hate to say it. Yeah, but it's very rewarding. And, you know, we get thousands of entries into that, you know.
That's a lot of money. That's a big impact.
It is. It really is. And to think that, you know, even in COVID times in 2020, in 2021, well, that was when we increased from 3 to 5. And that was really, you know, I think that says a lot about, you know, who we are and what we do as an overall industry. But, you know, for those of us who give back, we know it's so important to do that because, you know, we didn't get where we are by just keeping everything to ourselves and not having something for everyone and giving back to the state and the community because we are a real part of that. And, you know, we realize that. And even when we had the hurricane Helene last year that brought such devastation to some of South Carolina and much of North Carolina, you know, we gave a donation to them as well. But it's important for us as fairs, you know, to remember that.
Quite a big donation too.
Yep.
Yeah, because that's what a lot of people don't realize, maybe even people in the industry, I don't know, but, you know, a state fair, all of them are not all of them, but a lot of them are different types of organizations. Like you're a nonprofit, right? You're 501c3.
We are.
You're self-supported. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't, the state doesn't just pay your bills and say, good luck, do whatever you want. You know, because other states, they do. They get a big subsidy, mm-hmm. or even if they're a, you know, sort of a quasi-governmental organization, mm-hmm. they get, you know, some support. But to have to make it on your own is a little bit different. So even though you're the state fair, you're a nonprofit and you have to, you know, fight for your own food or whatever.
You do.
You eat or whatever they say.
You do. But we've been very blessed with that and have had good leadership. But I like it being a 501c3, but our name, I think it's a common misconception for us, Ron, because, you know, we've done surveys and we'll say, did you know that the fair is a 501c3? We're a nonprofit organization. No, I didn't know that. Did you know we give scholarships? No. Would that make a difference? You know, has that made a difference in the way you feel? And I truly think it does. But for us, it's just the name is a little bit of a confusion for folks. But yeah, and a lot of people don't realize. They don't realize that some fairs are, you know, state supported, some aren't, and some are, you know, quasi, like you said. And
I think they're like, Nancy, I'm just here to ride the rides and eat some food. I'm not really concerned about the scholarship. No, which is probably true of, you know, probably 90%, but it is a nice thing. Mm-hmm. It's a great thing. And it's definitely something that makes people feel good about the fair and that their money's going, you know, to help do something, you know, to support the community and support other people, which is great. But, you know, most people are going to go, you know, if you said you gave it to some horrible thing, they probably wouldn't care because they want to go to the fair and have a good time, you know, in the end.
That's true. But we're hoping we get the word out for as many
people. Yeah, yeah. No, it's I think the fact that you're self-supporting is really important, that you know, you don't get a handout from the taxpayer dollars or you don't get, you know, whatever is really important because, you know, that I think people take for granted that you might, you know, they can afford to lose money because they get money from taxes or they get money from whatever they think they might get money from. So it's.
And I think for some of the smaller fairs too, you know, that were supported, you know, during COVID, that was really, you know, that was really a rough time. And, you know, some that were not as well managed as others, you know, they really suffered from that.
Yeah, no question.
Yes.
South Carolina's got, you said 11 fairs now?
We're at 12, but 12. I'm unsure of one of those. So,
if it's the one I think about that I work with, it's not looking good.
Okay. I think that's the one. Yeah,
we're looking, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard when you don't have land.
I know. Yeah. And, you know, I have a real heart for that. You know, I'm the current president of the South Carolina Association of Fairs. And, you know, we joined with Georgia. I think this has been 13 years ago.
Has it been 13 years? Holy
yes. God. Can you believe that?
And no, I can't.
We've had a great relationship with them. But I really have a heart, you know, for our fairs. And, you know, we're going to try to. Oh, that's my goal is to leave them better than I found them too. And
there's a few that have gone away over the year. You know, I can think of a couple. I think there's one in like Camden, South Carolina for a few years. There was one in Monk's Corner used to have a fair a long time ago.
Yes, and they tried to get another one going in Monk's Corner, but, you know, they didn't work. So, but, yeah.
The fairs you do have are really solid. They were always – I remember when you used to be on your own with your own convention by yourself. Oh. That was like very early when I first started in this business. It was at some place, and there was a pool in the middle. And
I know. I think that was even before my time. I found a so-called agenda for that meeting, and it was like, what? What is this? So
it was like 92 or 3 or something like that, probably somewhere around there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you were on your own, and then you joined with North Carolina for a few years, and then now with Georgia.
Now with Georgia. And we also have a spring meeting in June. We've tried to add another dimension to that where the Georgia Board of Directors come and then all the South Carolina fairs come. And we have we have another meeting and we talk about our convention and we have some speakers and things like that. So it's been good. And as you know, we couldn't have a trade show on our own with South Carolina with just the few fairs that we have. So that's really helped us in that regard as well.
You do, and it's a good convention. It's what, you know, some of the conventions have slipped quite a bit, but Georgia and South Carolina has a very good reputation.
That's what I heard. I've been hearing, you know, that a lot of them are going down, but this was the largest convention we've ever had this year. And maybe the Charleston location helped with that. But
it's always good when it's in South Carolina.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
So we're in there. Those are great.
Yeah, we're planning for 20. We're going to be hosting every other year now. So we'll host a game in 2027. So stand by for where it will be. But we did have a good one in Charleston. So
yeah, everyone has their own little character. Like Pennsylvania is really good. They're still pretty vibrant. You know, like Virginia, it's a lot about the beauty pageant. Like, you know, when I used to be an exhibitor, mm-hmm. all these people would walk through. I'd say, wow, they're all picking up my brochure. And they're like, well, that's just the beauty pageant people. They would grab everything and put it in their bags. And you think you were, you know, making contacts, but you really were doing nothing. Food, you said, is a big thing with you. What were some of the interesting foods you have this year and have you had over the year? Do you really push it, promote it, you know?
We do. That's a huge thing for us. I don't remember who I was talking to yesterday, somebody that we just started doing business with. And they said, well, I can tell you one thing. I bring my family out here. And we go through about 5 times to get those different Fisk fries. So, you know, Fisk fries have always been the staple for us. And here in South Carolina, like the elephant ears that you always hear about that. But that's the other thing we talked about, you know, what draws the interest for, you know, it draws the people's interest to come to the fair. And Ron, for us, is really like, what's the new food and what's the new ride at the fair? But food is a huge part of that. And I mentioned earlier that we have a rocket on the grounds at the fair.
Yes.
And I don't know how many know about
the
rocket.
Meet me at the rocket.
Yeah, meet me at the rocket. Well, the rocket is an intermediate range ballistic missile that was built by Chrysler and designed by Wernher von Braun. And it was donated to the city of Columbia by the U.S. Air Force because its name was Columbia.
And you made sure you deactivated, right?
Yes.
Definitely. Okay, good.
It was donated. Yeah, it was. I'll let you know. Keep your post. It was donated in the early 60s. And in 1969, it was erected at the north end of the fairgrounds. And thereby came the saying, meet me at the rocket. And we had, you probably know, I can't remember the first lady's name that was meet me at the rocket, but the second one was Miss Higginbotham. And she was our voice of the rocket. So rocket is a big thing for us here. And one of our concessionaires decided, I think we would like to do rocket sweet tea at the fair. So they created a cup. I may have my cup.
Do I have my cup? Oh, I do, right here.
This is our rocket sweet tea at the South Carolina State Fair. Yeah. So that was last year, and you would not believe. I think we're going to have an extra stand maybe this year. It went over really well. But we've tried to be a little bit more diverse with our food options. You know, people love the same thing. They love the staples that are here. Like one of my favorites is, as I said, Fisk fries and the jalapeno corn dog. That's Daly's dogs that have been here forever. But last year we had like the fried taco, and we brought barbecue. You know, barbecue is a big thing in South Carolina. And we thought several years ago, we thought we really need to have barbecue at the fair. We didn't have any barbecue. So in an effort to try to have our signature food at the fair, we have a local barbecue person, and he's come on board with us. But we still, you know, we'll have, you know, you name it. I think this was Gary saying, he said, they fry it, you know, you fry it, we'll buy it at the fair. So, but
it's popular, no question. What about that? You have that local barbecue guy with the mustard. Have they ever participated in the fair? They got a few locations, or at least maybe they're out of business now. I don't know, but they were like a big name. They had 3 or 4 locations, I thought.
Heights Barbecue. I'm not sure if that. I don't know.
I'm not a big mustard sauce person, so.
But anyway, you could.
But I saw the thing. I'm from Virginia, so that's a little different. But
yeah, North Carolina. Everybody has their own. But we try to introduce something every year. I think last year we had my mind's going blank, but we had 13 new foods last year.
Wow.
And, you know, people, they love it. And that's a thing for the media really, you know, likes to catch on to that. And
eat it up. Whatever crazy thing is new. And
yep, that's it. That's fun. So,
going on pickle pizza and different things that go on.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I was talking to Mike Knott from the CNE, and they have one of the most diverse food offerings you could possibly even imagine, up there. But, you know, we were talking about like introducing new things, was like you said, there's things that are popular, and they're popular for a reason because people want to eat them. And then, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you say, oh, I'm going to bring in whatever this thing, because it's healthier, because it's this. And then, you know, the poor guy dies. He doesn't make $4, you know, when he's sitting there, but you kind of can't force the market, you know, they got to mesh. There's got to be a demand for it, and you got to serve it. So, you know, sometimes you think you came up with a brilliant idea, but it doesn't do very well because it's not really a fair food.
It's not a fair food. And we have to be careful. You know, we like to say this is 12 days, you know, you can't get this, but just the 12 days. So we really try to be cognizant of that as well. But we also have to know that, you know, folks want some other options. We added seafood last year. That I knew it was something pretty big that we added. It went over well. It was our first year, but we'd had it, but maybe just 1 year, and then it kind of went away. But this is a local person that does seafood, so we'll do that. We had the dill pickle pizza. That was Spaghetti Eddie that's been here forever. But that's one of the things that we just, you know, just kind of came about. But people have they love that dill pickle.
I thought it was going to be terrible, but it actually wasn't too bad. I had mine from Rick's Pizza, Rick Yuckmar.
I said,
Ricky, this looks disgusting, but it wasn't too horrible.
No, I actually liked it. It was good. And I had that fried taco. It was good as well. And I saw them at the Big E when I was there, when we visited. And
if you've never had one, I used to run a fair up in New York, and I had a guy, it was a Zeppeli guy, you know, like the difference in funnel cakes, elephant ears up in New York. You have Zeppeli's dough balls, but he did a fried cannoli one time. Ooh. That was amazing. I couldn't believe how good it was. It was absolutely amazing. Fried cannoli.
Well, that sounds good. I'm getting kind of hungry now. We need.
Yeah, it was really good. It still stayed, like, you know, the cream was delicious, and I thought it would ruin it, but it didn't.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah, and then there's the Krispy Kreme donut burger. You know, when that came around.
Oh yeah, yeah. With,
that's between. Still around, and it's still pretty popular, but you don't hear quite as much about it as you used to. But it's a fad thing.
Because they all have stomach pains. That'd be rough. You know, from a marketing standpoint, we touched on it before with the concerts and things, because you have, you know, Columbia is a decent sized city, but it's relatively small. But to be a state fair, do you reach out to all three of the major markets in South Carolina plus?
We do. You know, we really reach out, you know, all across the state. And this year, you know, we're trying to make more of a reach with our, I think they call it Latinx, you know, our Hispanic population now. We're doing, you know, more with that. And speaking of the grandstand area, We normally have, you know, in the Pepsi Play stage, one area for, you know, Hispanic or Latinx or something, one of those. But yes, we do reach out throughout the state. Most of the people that come to the fair come from within like a 75-mile radius. But we do draw people even from, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina, because the state fair in North Carolina is in Raleigh. And we say Charlotte is just a little over an hour away, you know, and you can come to the South Carolina State Fair. So we draw from there as well. And yeah.
There's some decent sized cities right around Charlotte too.
Yes, there are. And so it's been interesting. We work with an advertising agency called Flock and Rally. They're in Columbia here. They're a local agency. And last year, our theme was 46 reasons to celebrate South Carolina, which is part of the answer to your question. And there are 46 counties in South Carolina. So that gave us an extra little bit of emphasis and an extra way to try to, you know, grab all of those people from each county and make everyone aware. We did an exhibit for each county in our roof building. We had 46 different exhibit areas, and each county displayed their own items. Now, full disclosure, I got that idea from the Wilson County Fair, Tennessee State Fair, when we went to visit. And they do a great job of that, but we tried that. But that was a way to, you know, help reach out. And through the years, we really have built some really good relationships with all of our, you know, television stations here, with NBC, CBS, ABC, Watch Fox. And they all are very supportive of the South Carolina State Fair. So that's what's been around so long.
I know, like in Charleston, you know, this not anymore as much, but back in the day, they used to like broadcast. They were real supportive of the South Carolina stations. Did they do the same in Columbia? They used to broadcast a lot. They would have like a little booth, and they would.
Oh yeah, they do. And actually, last year, WIS, that's our NBC, when they were back, they were live on grounds last year, and that's the first time they've been back. You know, that's another thing that COVID has kind of changed. You know, we know that COVID and technology, I guess, we'll put that together. But WIS was on grounds last year, and then WLTX, and all of them are, you know, they're very good about that. And they'll have us on in the morning to, you know, we try to get them hyped up about what's going on at the fair. We've even gone there and taken the food items so they can test it and, you know, try it. But they're really good about supporting.
But it's good for them too, because the ratings on broadcast TV have shrunk so much, you know, but who's really even watching that much anymore? But you are an event that draws 400,000 people. So by them going, right, they can actually maybe attract some more viewers for their, maybe they switch to the one that's at the fair. Maybe they, it's good for them to actually get more viewers and get things, because you're bigger than they are in a lot of senses.
Yeah, it's a win-win, you know, for both of us. It really is. And I think that's been, you know, I'm seeing a little bit of a difference in that. And I hope we can, you know, get some more, you know, exciting things going on with that. I mean, we've had them, well, you know this, you've heard it from before, but we've even had like the Marriage on the Midway. And, you know, some of them have been very supportive of that. So last year, one of the anchors, longtime anchors that had been in Columbia for years and years and years, Joe Penner, he had a show for the kids in the early morning hours on WIS called Mr. Knows It. But he was a part of our fair forever. And he passed away earlier in 2024. So we had a Joe Penner Day at the fair. You know, we had it celebrated. That's Joe nice. Penner at the fair. And it was, that was a pretty neat way to involve the media. You know, a little bit of a sad way, but I mean, he was a real icon at the fair, and they wanted to remember him, and we worked together to do that. So,
yeah, things have just changed so much, you know, but even at a big fair, if I'm doing media or buying media, you know, it's like the broadcast TV, you know, I know they still get some of, especially the older audience, but you know, for all intents and purposes, anybody under, I mean, you know, I don't even know the number. It's pretty old, you know, like 50s, like you're, they just don't watch it anymore. I mean, it's just not even a, it's not even a thing. You look at it and forget it. Yeah, somebody's in their 30s or 20s. And like, what are you talking about? The broadcast news, it doesn't even exist, you know.
What is that? Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I've been here so long, I remember all the radio stations were on ground. Yeah. All the radio stations, all of the television stations, you know, they had, everybody had their own booth, their own stage, and, you know, seen a lot of change. But the fact that people are still coming and, you know, our numbers are up, that says that, you know,
you're reaching them somehow.
We're reaching them, and, you know, the fairs are offering things that people want and need. So
Well, we only got a minute left, but where do you see the fairs are still, I mean, you just said fairs are still relevant. You're still doing your thing. You think there's a positive long future for fairs and events in the country?
Well, I'm certainly more of an optimist, but I do think that. I also think that, you know, just as everything else in life, you know, it's up to us, those of us who have been here, you know, to make sure that we don't lose sight of that. But I think, you know, it's a good time for, we do need a revival. I mean, in South Carolina, we need a little kickstart to get us here going with all of the fairs, and to know, be reminded, you know, of what a difference you make. And I think the way we do that is, you know, we have our support of our IAFE, you know, the International Association. And I think our networking opportunities are something that, you know, I've always said other organizations don't have that, because we're not in such a dog eat dog world. We're here to help each other. So my prayer is that we would always remember that, and to know that we're all here to make the best better. And, you know, but it's a responsibility for each of us to do that. And we know we have to look at, you know, we can't look at everything that was behind. We have to look to the future and to know how we can do that and survive and continue to bring, you know, the great traditions that fairs bring to folks.
Yeah, and continue to bring things that are new and exciting and bring people out there. Nancy, thank you so much for coming on.
Okay.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. And, thanks, Ron. Thanks for all you do for us.
I don't do too much, but I try. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by Innovative Ticketing. Is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Our staff of professionals can guide you through your setup, assist with customer service, even on the weekends when you most need it, and help increase your sales through promotions that work. Innovative Ticketing is the ticketing source made for the amusement industry. Sign up today at innovativeticketing.com.